Well, the United States uses more than 140 billion gallons of gasoline and about almost, I guess, 40 billion gallons of diesel fuel annually. More than 60% of the petroleum we use is imported, and the 2005 Energy Act mandated that 250 million gallons of ethanol be produced from cellulose materials by 2012. That's kind of the topic that we have coming up next year as we visit over the phone with Bruce Dale. Bruce from East Lansing, Michigan, professor in the Department of Chemical Engineering and Material Science at Michigan State University. And he is the Associate Director of the Office of Bio-Based Technologies and is Editor-in-Chief of BioFPR. It's a new journal discussing biofuels, bioproducts, and biorefining. And I believe, well, we'll find out the website and talk some more with Bruce Dale. And if you want to chime in with your own comments and questions as we move along here today, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Bruce Dale, welcome. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation.
Let's talk about the Biomass Conversion Research Lab at Michigan State University first. What's that mission? What's the mission of that group?
Well, that's the lab that I direct, and the mission is pretty simply stated. Our goal is to help develop both economical and environmentally friendly ways of converting plant material into fuels and chemicals.
So, and of course, now the emphasis has been on, so far, it's been on corn and soybeans for that, but you're looking at other alternatives as well.
Yeah, I've been working for over 30 years to convert non-food materials, grasses, straws, wood chips, we call them cellulosic materials, into ethanol primarily, although it's really any sort of, or many other chemicals could be made or fuels could be made, but ethanol is the benchmark.
You had a chance to talk with President Bush last February, I believe, about the potential of cellulose ethanol and other biofuels. What did you tell him?
I was there with a group of 10 people, five who were both basically people doing electric cars, batteries, and so forth, and the other five were like myself in the biofuel arenas. And he spent 2 hours with us, asked a lot of good questions. But basically he said, I know the country needs to get off of gasoline. What I don't know is if we can do it technically. Is it possible? And what he heard from us was, absolutely yes, it is possible.
So it's possible in the how near future?
Well, it depends partly on the amount of effort that we devote to it and our policies and so forth. But it took us about 100 years to get into this mess. I think it'll take us 20 to get well out of it.
So. Okay. So we
can make noticeable progress in 10 to 15 years. You know, we can really know we've turned the corner, I think, in that amount of time.
Well, we have some callers online. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Bill in Sparta, we'll give you a chance. Bill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and I love this topic. myself, I had done some research into doing it, producing ethanol on my own in the past, and what I had wondered is why has not anybody just put a program together to use your particular yard wastes and table scraps, you know, and do it yourself in the home as a subsidy for your fuel costs rather than using big industry to produce mass quantities of it. I think if you were to approach it in that method, you might have a better shot at eradicating the gasoline situation.
Hmm. Well, Bruce, comment from you, Bruce Dale?
Yep, I'm sorry, but it's just not very suitable to be something you can cook on your stove and do this. It's just not feasible to do it, at least not for a liquid fuel. I mean, you could maybe throw a bunch of stuff in your backyard digester and get a little bit of methane out, but not a replacement for gasoline.
It's not going to replace gasoline. All right. Mark and Racine, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I get a science digest called Science News, and there's been recent research done on the global cost of producing a biodiesel fuel, and it looks at everything from soil depletion to transportation costs to all kinds of things, and it turns out that soy diesel is much more environmentally friendly and costs much less per BTU than alcohol-based fuels. And it's much more efficient, doesn't deplete the soil near as much. And I was wondering what you might know about that. We have a real ethanol producer's push for increased ethanol, but I think that what we need is what's going to benefit the society overall best over the long term.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, comment?
Yeah, I'm acquainted with the study you're talking about. This goes to what are the appropriate ways, the measurements, metrics for measuring alternative fuels. I actually think that that particular metric is mistaken. There's several really basic issues. First, we can never begin to think of even producing enough soy biodiesel to make a dent in our petroleum replacement. It's not scalable. It just isn't going to be able to contribute the scale that's needed. Second, although it gets somewhat better per gallon performance than ethanol, the per acre performance, in other words, how much soy biodiesel you could produce per acre, is much worse than ethanol's. And so I guess I would disagree with the conclusions of the study. I would think they're correct based on the metrics they've chosen. I think the metrics are wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, my goal is long-term sustainability. We have grandchildren, you know.
Well, I have grandchildren, too. We all have that goal. But there are ways. First of all, if you're comparing with ethanol made from cellulosic materials, cellulosic materials will be much more soil-friendly, much more soil-conserving. And there are ways to then either ethanol from corn or ethanol from soy or soy biodiesel, but there are ways of tweaking the corn ethanol system to make it much more environmentally friendly. And we've published on some of those. For example, planting a cover crop. So again, it's really important what measurements you use or what metrics you use to compare things.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Mark, for calling. Jim in Menominee, Michigan, will turn to you next. Jim, hello to you.
Thank you for taking my call. Bruce, my question is, up here in the Upper Peninsula, they're talking now about biodiesel from trees. And I wanted to know how viable that is, how much, you know, you're talking per acre, I guess I'd be talking per quart, you know, how much fuel you could get out of that, and would that take away from, say, the paper industry or the pulp? And I'll just get off now and listen to your answer.
All right. Thank you for calling. Bruce?
Well, there's a lot of questions there. Let me see if I can go after them a bit. For people that are listening, the process he's talking about is what's called Fischer-Tropsch diesel. And what it means is that you basically heat up the plant material. You make a mixture of carbon monoxide and hydrogen. It's called syngas. And then you chemically process that to make a diesel substitute, a diesel kind of fuel. And yes, it's certainly doable. It's a really big capital expense, and the technology is pretty well known. If that were going to be something that would stand on its own economically, we'd probably already be doing it with coal or other places where we have really cheap carbon. But nonetheless, it is a viable alternative, and I think it's going to end up being used for some materials in some places. It can be used on any quality of woody or, you know, plant material. And so it would certainly have some competition with the lumber industry, but maybe not much because it can use scrap and chips and a lot of stuff that the board industry or even the pulp and paper industry can't use very well.
Interesting. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll take some more calls here, but I want to remind you that we're visiting today with Bruce Dale of East Lansing, Michigan, professor in the Department of Chemical Engineering and Material Science at Michigan State University. And he is the associate director of the Office of Bio-Based Technologies and editor-in-chief of a new journal discussing biofuels, bioproducts, biorefining. And we'll visit with him right up until 12:30 today. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking bioenergy and biofuels now with Bruce Dale, professor in the Department of Chemical Engineering and Material Science at Michigan State University. Larry Mueller here, glad to have you listening in as we visit with him. And certainly if you have questions, we hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234, Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. And Bruce, we have many callers online, so I would like to go to the phones and to Mike in Appleton, who's been waiting. Mike, hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon. I don't have a question. It's more a comment. It would seem to me that probably the solution to our energy problem is going to be a combination of different alternatives. The problem I see is, and as your guest said, you know, we're probably 10, 15, 20 years away from this. The problem that I see is that as the price goes up and as we are continually willing to pay, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, who knows how much dollars per gallon of gas, then more and more petroleum becomes available to cover that need simply because of the price. And so, you know, as the price goes up, that window of, you know, when are we going to be able to get away from it is pushed further down the road.
Bruce, what do you think?
Well, it's the major thing that will allow us to develop alternatives to petroleum. The driving force is, in fact, the higher prices of petroleum. So I think, you know, I think he's right about that. But the question of how much oil can be produced at any price, that's a slippery one because we're not talking about there's different kinds, as you know, of oil. Tertiary recovery, there's the Athabasca tar sands, there's the, you know, on and on and on, deep water oil. I'm not convinced that yet that these alternatives, actually, including cellulosic ethanol, I am convinced that over time they will become cheaper, in fact, than gasoline has been for a long, long time. I'm talking well under $1 a gallon to make ethanol from cellulosic materials. So, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But it isn't a given that that oil is the only thing that will happen as we get higher prices. Alternatives come in, including vehicle efficiency, including electrically powered vehicles, lots of alternatives. I do think that we will never again have a fuel system that's as monolithic as the one we have, is totally dependent on petroleum. It'll be a lot more things contributing.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Mike. Jerry in Pewaukee, you're next. Thanks, Jerry.
Hi. I'd like to ask Professor Dale. A while back, I read about an effort to make a fuel cell using alcohol. And I think in this context, I read it had something to do with powering laptop computers. But I'm just wondering if that's a real technology and if it's feasible to be scaled up to, you know, power automobiles.
Well, a fuel cell, of course, is a device for converting a fuel into hydrogen, basically then taking the hydrogen back and combining it with oxygen to make the electricity that drives the vehicle. I mean, that's fundamentally what a fuel cell is. And so ethanol is one of the things that can, in fact, carry hydrogen. It's a hydrogen carrier, as can methanol and many other things. But I don't know enough about fuel cell technology to know whether how big a role they're going to play in the future. But in a lot of ways, if you have cheap enough ethanol, there's no particular reason to put it in a fuel cell. You'd simply put it in your internal combustion engine, or in a turbocharged engine, where you can take advantage of its higher octane rating and get more power. But the small scale fuel cells using ethanol and methanol, I think, are probably the wave of the future for batteries and other things that need electricity.
Interesting. Thanks, Jerry. Nate in Sauk City. Hi to you.
Thanks. A couple of questions for your guest. I would like him to analyze in a little more detail the future of how he looks at the economic viability of ethanol for the future as to how to determine its net benefit from an energy standpoint. And also, is the focus on ethanol an interim step to go to some other kind of energy generation in the future? How does he view that? And if so, how many years is ethanol going to be kind of the crucial focus here? And then the second area I'd like him to comment on is, it seems to me it's kind of a no-brainer that all of us in the Midwest should be big advocates of some kind of ethanol production, at least for some period, in that most of the refined oil that's coming into the country is coming in at the coastal areas, and it seems like it's a boon to the economy of the coastal regions of the United States, where this would be a boon to the Midwest. Your comments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, well, that's a long list of things. Let me get started at the top. And the first thing, you talked about ethanol economics, and then it kind of segued into a discussion about energy efficiency. Let me handle those differently because they're two different things. We know how much it costs to make corn ethanol, and I'm going to break it down into corn and cellulosic ethanol. And, right now, corn ethanol is economically competitive on its own, with corn at $3.50 a bushel and oil well over $90 a barrel. It's a competitive fuel right now. And so the cost of production of ethanol is something on the order of $1.50 to $2 a gallon with corn prices the way they are. When we get cellulosic ethanol developed, I believe we'll be able to make ethanol for well under $1 a gallon. And so that's a very, very cheap fuel. Now let me talk briefly about net energy. This is unfortunately one of the most confusing and issues out there. And I'll just briefly say that measurements of ethanol or any other alternative fuels efficiency are really important. But the measurement that's called net energy is not a good measurement. In fact, it's a silly measurement. Net energy is defined as the fuel value of the fuel minus the sum of all the fossil fuel inputs required to produce it. And basically, you add up the energy value of coal, of petroleum, and natural gas required to make the fuel. You subtract that from the fuel's value, and that's the fuel's net energy. There's a number of problems with that analysis, and number one is that you're mixing different types of energy. In other words, a megajoule or a BTU of coal is not equal to, it doesn't have equal value either in the market or in utility to a megajoule of natural gas or of petroleum. It's clear that that's the case. In other words, we pay about eight times as much for a megajoule of petroleum as we are for a megajoule of coal. But that's how the net energy measurements calculated. It's dumb. It's not a relevant measurement. And even if it were, the people that have done this over the time have never asked what's gasoline's net energy. I really hope that we'll insist, not in some absolutely perfect fuel, but on what does it compare? How does it compare with the competition? If you do that calculation for ethanol's net energy and you compare it with gasoline's net energy, based on that measurement, gasoline's net energy is worse than ethanol's. Okay, it's much more negative. So the net energy idea is dumb, frankly. It's just a dumb idea. There are other measurements of efficiency that are better. For instance, fuel delivered to the customer per amount of petroleum consumed. That's a good measurement. Fuel delivered to the customer per amount of greenhouse gases generated. That's a good metric. But the net energy metric is a stupid metric. Okay, now, having gotten that off my
head. Oh, boy, you got that off you. Are you sure that you're being...
Yes, I'm absolutely sure.
you're not being unequivocal here, are you?
Yeah, just kind of hiding my opinions a little bit here. Okay, let me go on to the issue about, which I think is really, really important, and the caller put his finger on it. We have a lot of population and a lot of business activity, a lot of economics around the coast for a good reason, because that's where we import stuff. And in particular, we import a lot of oil, and so it gets refined around the coast, and that's where the jobs are, and then it gets doled out into the interior. What we're talking about with an economy based more on ethanol, based more on plant material generally to produce fuels and chemicals, is reverse that trend. The value-added stuff is in the center of the country, and the products flow from our agricultural heartland out. And so in terms of jobs, in terms of wealth creation, and all the opportunities for rural communities to benefit, this what we call the bioeconomy is a much, much better deal than the petroeconomy.
Interesting. Thanks, Nate, very much for calling. And, of course, I should mention that you're at Michigan State, and Michigan State University and the University of Wisconsin and other organizations have created the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center to really work on a lot of this research.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it's a great project.
Yeah, it's a great...
And if my friends at the University of Wisconsin are listening, hi, guys.
All right. A lot going on, I'll tell you with that. Wisconsin people are probably saying, go Spartans for this weekend's Michigan State. Penn State game, too. That's a whole other topic. Dale in Centuria, it's your turn. Hi, Dale.
Hello. I have a question concerning the use of raw soybean oil for diesel fuel versus going through the process with the lye and the methanol. We've heard of it being done, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. And just a comment that my impression is conservation is the key to the energy issue, and that's the biggest area that needs to be addressed.
Hmm.
Well, let me take them in reverse order. I agree that conservation is important, and we need to have more efficient vehicles. We need to be more efficient in our lifestyles. But even if we're able to increase vehicle efficiency, you know, by 30 or 40 or 50%, just the growth that we have year to year in driving and consumption, population, everything else, would wipe that out in not very many years. And so I think it's important. I think we should do it. But by itself, it's not enough. Okay? It's not enough.
Okay.
Then let me go at the other issue. I'm not a biodiesel expert, but there's some really important quality issues about biodiesel. If you don't process it carefully, if you don't take care of its flow properties, its viscosity, and you have it in a truck in, let's say, Minnesota about a month from now, that truck ain't going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It won't flow. All the jets get plugged up, and you're stuck. And so homemade biodiesel without proper quality controls, I think, is a pretty bad idea.
All right. Thank you, Dale, for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura in Madison, your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Let's see if I can phrase this properly. I'm wondering, at the current rate of use, for transportation and for heating, at the current rate of use, if we converted every available acre to bioenergy production, would we meet current demands? What percentage of the current demand are we talking about here, even if we converted every single acre?
Well, it depends. There's an awful lot of assumptions that would have to go into that. And let me give you some of the background there. My own objective, actually, is not to replace petroleum. Well, here, we'll back up a little bit further. We use three primary sources of energy, carriers of energy. We use petroleum, coal, and natural gas. Coal primarily for generating electricity and keeping us warm, and natural gas also for generating electricity and keeping us warm. But for petroleum, it's our only transportation fuel, and that's about 35 or 40% of our total energy consumption. I think it's very realistic to replace all of our imported petroleum, 60% right now of what we use is imported, with plant-derived fuels, depending on how you do it. And the answer is yes, there's plenty of acreage to do it, particularly if we get a little bit creative and rethink agriculture, which we've done in the past and could redo. So the short answer is yes, it's very doable, particularly to replace imported petroleum, which I argue is our biggest difficulty. Probably not to replace all energy of all kinds.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Tom in Mequon, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Interesting show. It seems to me that even with the since the mandate that President Bush put in after Katrina to use more alcohol fuel, that you can see a rise in the price of other products that are made from corn and from soybeans and from other things like that, because there is a higher percentage now going towards fuel instead of going towards food. So I'm against on that point, but my main point is that I think it's down to a moral issue. I think it's wrong to plant things in the earth where it's taken thousands of years to put those minerals and stuff in the ground, and you put it in your gas tank. I think that's wrong, and I think, for instance, oil or nuclear, there's a lot of oil. You know, there was just a big find off of Brazil, and we've got oil around off the coast and up in Alaska. We should be using that and not stripping the earth to put it in people's gas tanks. I think it's wrong.
Okay, I think you're setting up a straw man. No responsible person, including myself, advocates mining the soil. The mineral content that comes off of the plant material is going to go back on the soil. So there, and you know, from my point of view, the grasses, perennial grasses that I advocate that we use as kind of the basis of our cellulosic ethanol, are great at building soil quality over time. They actually increase soil organic matter. They increase fertility over time. So I share your concern, you know, about not mining soil, and none of us, none of the responsible people in this area, plan to do that. With regard to other fuels, and I'll weigh in here pretty heavily, I think it's much more responsible for us to get oil offshore Brazil or offshore U.S. than it is to continue to buy oil from Iran or other places where they'll turn around and use it to do bad things. So, you know, it's a complicated world we live in. We have to deal with things as they are, and so that's what how I come down on the moral issue. But I agree completely that if biofuels end up undermining the soil, we will have killed ourselves.
Yeah, thank you, Tom, for calling. Carl in Madison, your turn. Hi, Carl.
Howdy. About 4 years ago, Kathleen Dunn, one of the other hosts on Wisconsin Public Radio, had a program which featured two guests from the University of New York at SUNY at Buffalo. And they were, within a year, going to start a full-scale production using a defunct brewery using scrub willow. And I followed this and other cellulosic matters for the last 4 years as a consequence of that program. My question to you is the following. Why do they talk about switchgrass when there's other faster-growing hardwoods and whatnot that could be used as a cellulosic stock? And I understand the enzymes that are used to reduce that are quite expensive, but given the price of gasoline now, it seems that that would become cheap. The other thing is there were other byproducts. For instance, I can't remember the name of this plastic, but a very high-grade plastic, which in itself was far more valuable than the cost than the ethanol would retrieve, and then there's other byproducts. So maybe your guest could speak to that.
Boy, do any of your callers ever ask just one question? I usually get three or four. I'm writing them down here to try to think about how to respond. Well, let me go to the switchgrass one first. There are a lot of different raw materials that we're going to use in different parts of the country, and willow makes sense in particularly the northern climates, northern wet areas. Switchgrass makes sense in a lot of areas, including some of those that are also where willow makes sense, but where willow does not make sense, again, just based on soil types and rainfall. We're not going to have one raw material that we use to feed cellulosic ethanol. It'll be a variety of things across the country. I guess second was the cost of enzymes. Was that the next one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an issue. And one of the things that the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is aimed at doing, this is work between Michigan State and the University of Wisconsin, is to try to reduce the cost of the enzymes significantly. Then finally, on plastics, there's actually some companies already, as you probably know, NatureWorks and DuPont are making bio-based plastics, plastics ultimately derived from corn by fermentation. And those markets are growing just fine, and they're very important, but they don't make much of a dent in our petroleum use because we just don't use that much oil to make plastics.
Hmm, interesting. Thank you very much for calling, Carl. Appreciate it. And John in Milwaukee, we turn to you next. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
I got a quick question. It seems the cheapest, as far as I know, for making energy is hydroelectric. And what I'm wondering is, hydroelectric is so cheap, why don't, it seems probably we don't have a market for it, but it seems like you could go into the remotest areas of the world, in Canada, Alaska, Siberia, wherever you want, do hydroelectric and just crack the water and the hydrogen. I know it's inefficient, but the price of hydroelectric power is so inexpensive that even if it was 100% inefficient and you had to double the price of what it costs to the hydroelectric, it's still going to be cheap.
Well, I think there's a lot of assumptions there that I don't know one way or the other if they're borne out. If you went to remote regions, first of all, I understand we've used a lot of the prime spots for making hydroelectric power now, so they're producing at capacity. And a lot of those reservoirs are filling up, you know, so you have to rethink what's going to happen there. But if you went to a really remote region and built a dam and then generated electricity, I don't know why you wouldn't export that electricity as electricity rather than hydrogen. So I guess I didn't catch that very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it may be cheap to produce. It may not be all that cheap to distribute. You still have to put the power lines in and so forth. So those are just some thoughts, but I'm not an expert in that area.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate that call. And let's go to Nancy in Grafton next. Hi, Nancy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. One of the things I was wondering is algae that's on our ponds and waterways, could that be harvested? And the other thing is in Stratford, Wisconsin, there's something called Grand Meadow Energy, and they are using whey to make ethanol. And I thought that's kind of interesting. Have you heard about that?
Okay. Heard about whey, use of whey.
Cheese whey?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. Sorry, I heard waste. Yeah.
Oh, whey. Yeah,
cheese whey is certainly something that can be used, and it can make quite a bit of ethanol, but it's not enough to really dent our petroleum. We just don't have that. Even in Wisconsin, we don't have that much cheese whey. Okay, so yes, and it's one of the things that should be done. It's a good contributor. Then the question was about algae.
Yes.
Yeah, there's some really smart people working on algae, and I hope that they succeed. But there's some fundamental engineering problems there that they have to overcome. Basically, what you need for low-cost algae production is a lot of flat land with a lot of sun and quite a bit of water. And those kind of don't go together.
Yeah.
They're called deserts. And and it's actually the last time I read the reviews on that, it's still a fairly expensive process. But I wish them well and hope that they can overcome that because it does have some really attractive features.
Thanks again for calling. John in Milwaukee, you have a quick question?
I was going to ask about the microbial energy production, but that kind of was just covered. My question, or seeing what input might be available, is, you know, there's all sorts of technology out there. The gentleman was just mentioning hydrogen cracking water to produce hydrogen and using fuel cells and all these other alternatives. My main question, I guess, is why should we not invest our effort into this and invest our effort into ethanol production?
Well, as I think I mentioned earlier, I believe there's a lot of alternatives that are going to be explored and many of them adopted over the next years as we shift away from exclusive dependence on petroleum. I don't think any one solution is going to be completely dominant, including biofuels, although I think they're going to be important. And so I really caution us about putting all of our energy eggs in one basket. I think we need a multitude, a more diverse fuel supply, not a monolithic fuel supply.
Bruce, thank you very much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Bruce Dale, professor in the Department of Chemical Engineering and Materials Science at Michigan State University. And we'll continue our discussions on bioenergy and biofuels. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.